Good evening, friends. Welcome back to the room of silence, the room of words. Welcome for the first time to some. For a little while now, we'll treat it as a room of words. And bring up a Zen story from one of the koan collections, the Book of Serenity, case 11, called Yunmen's Two Sicknesses. I almost hesitated to bring up this story, but we're going through these stories one at a time so far. And I thought if I skip this, it may be a little bit of attachment in skipping it, right? You could say I'm attached to not skipping too, right? But my intuition was to just go straight ahead and offer these stories like this. I hesitated because it's a story about kind of enlightenment sicknesses that come after realizing some degree of freedom. And we might say, well, we don't have to worry about that. Let's just work on the basic practice and realize a little bit of freedom. Even if it comes with a little sickness, I'm okay with that. But wherever we're at, I think this story could apply, because it's basically about attachment. It's about holding any ideas about any kind of state or experience or body or mind that we have at any time. So that's the basic principle. Reviewing my teacher Tenshin Roshi's comments on this story, he said basically this particular Zen koan is instructions in not grasping anything and being very humble. And of course, that instruction is good for our whole life, right? But particularly if we make any semblance of any progress in practice, if we feel like it's benefiting us in some way, the more humble we must be. If we hold on to any goodies that come from this practice, they become sickness. That's what this story is about. One other commentary on this, modern commentary on this story, case 11, says, in this koan we can see how the Book of Serenity differs from the Blue Cliff Record. These are the two main koan collections of 100 Zen stories each. This is like 11th century China. These classic Zen books. The Blue Cliff Record is primarily a Rinzai Zen school collection. Rinzai Zen tends to be a little more like rough and direct and forceful, maybe, than Soto Zen. This is the Soto Zen school. We tend to be a little more gentle and maybe subtle in our style. So the Blue Cliff Record is primarily a Rinzai Zen collection, and the koans in it are like large boulders which can be moved only by vigorous effort. But koans like this one today, case 11, more typical of the Soto school, this is a Soto school koan collection, challenge us to practice more subtly, to find the dust within the dust within the dust and sweep even that away. I just thought that was a nice introduction. And again, that's part of why I hesitated a bit to bring this up. Because those boulder-like stories are, you know, are nice to bring out and roll the boulder through the room, and we get a little, you know, maybe obviously knocked off our seat by those boulders, which is a nice thing, right? But this story and many stories of the and practices in the Soto tradition are more like dust instead of boulders. Instead of rolling a big boulder to knock everyone away, it's more just like sifting through layers of dust upon dust upon dust. So, please excuse me. Yunmen's two sicknesses. Yunmen, or means cloud gate. This Zen ancestor named Cloud Gate lived in the 9th century and appears in many, many of these Zen stories. She's one of the favorite Zen ancestors as far as pithy sayings to collect into these collections. Often these koans are like dialogues, as you may know, stories, dialogues between two people, but this story is just Yunmen speaking. There's no dialogue. He's just giving this little talk. And the stories usually start with an introduction, so kind of poetic introduction to set the flavor. So the introduction to the story says, a bodiless man suffers illness. A handless person compounds medicine. A mouthless one ingests it. A senseless person is well. But tell me, how do you treat an incurable disease? It's about sickness here. Great Master Yunmen said to the assembly, when the light does not penetrate freely, there are two kinds of sickness. When the light does not circulate unhinderedly, the light here is the inconceivable radiance of present open awareness that's free of all sickness and dis-ease. The light that the light of freedom for ourselves and the light of helping everyone else responding to the situation at hand. That's the light that we practice in the midst of in this practice. So when this light does not circulate or penetrate freely, there's two kinds of sickness. Maybe even, you know, alluding to Chinese medicine, where when the inner energy, the qi, is not circulating freely, that's the cause of illness in Chinese medicine. So these two sicknesses, one is when all places are not clear and there is something before you. So let's just take one at a time. Basically, there's two sets of two sicknesses, and that's the content of this story. So again, the first sickness is when all places everywhere are not totally clear and there's something before you. So in the commentary, it seems to imply that this is not our usual total unclarity where we're just confused and caught up. This seems to be implying that already there's some sense of there's some freedom. The light is starting to circulate, but just not fully. There's still, we're not totally clear, and there's something before us. So again, picking up on my teacher's comments on this Zen story, he breaks down these first two types of sicknesses into these first, basically, two kinds of realization. So in Zen, sometimes it's like that. What is often celebrated as a realization, a liberation, is treated as kind of a little bit of a sickness. Zen is a little bit strict in that sense. It's like something good has a little, we want to be really free and clear. So even something good, we have to look carefully for some dust to sift through there. So this first type of realization, just to throw a little Sanskrit into the mix, in case you're getting bored of English, it's called Pudgala Nairatmiya. You might know that term, Anatman, famous term in Buddhism that means Atman is like a self, a permanent, independently existent essence of who we are, called some kind of invisible but essential entity called a self that was around in Buddha's, this teaching was around in Buddha's time, the Atman. And so one of the things that Buddha taught that was a really radical response to this teaching of Atman is Anatman, which in Sanskrit means there is no Atman. Through Buddha's experience, examining his own body and mind experience very carefully, it's like, well, I can't find any permanent, substantially, independently existing essence of myself here. It just seems to be this constantly changing body and mind experience. That's all. There's nobody, you know, in the center of it. There's nobody encircling it. There's nobody in charge of it. There's nobody controlling it. These are ways we think of as a kind of some kind of self. There is body and mind experience rising and ceasing every moment. But there's on Atman. So Nairatmiya is basically another Sanskrit word that's another variation on Anatman. It means selflessness, or no self, or identitylessness. And Pudgala means person in Sanskrit. So this Pudgala Nairatmiya is the selflessness or identitylessness of the person. And this is a realization that is very freeing to drop off and release the burden of my body and mind. You could say release the ownership of body and mind by some kind of me. So then we just have body and mind. You might say, well, it's not that different, but this is the pivotal difference of always things not going quite right and things being quite all right even when they're difficult. That's the pivot. Is it just body and mind rising and ceasing, or is it my body and mind? That slight shift is the difference between heaven and earth. So this is the first realization taught. In all schools of Buddhism agree that this is the pivotal turning point where liberation comes forth. So my teacher's commentary is, this first sickness is pudala, pudala naratmiya, the selflessness of the person. Very nice, but it's still sick because all places around us or everywhere out there is not quite clear, and there's still something before you, before me. There's no self here, but there is still a body and mind, and there's a room and a world and many living beings that still there's kind of like... And we get attached to that. We get attached to the external things. Even body and mind as truly substantial existent things. Even though there's no owner of them anymore, it can still feel as if... this all is substantially and independently existent. So that's a kind of sickness. A kind of a nice sickness to get, right? We're liberated from the bondage of the view of the self, of the person, but there's still something before us. This is the first kind of sickness. The next sickness is having penetrated the emptiness of all things, the emptiness of all phenomena, suddenly it seems like there is something there. This too is the light not penetrating freely. So the second sickness is what we call Dharma Nairatmiya. This is often taught in Mahayana Buddhism. This is a pair. In early foundational Buddhism, only the selflessness of the person is taught. But later, in the Mahayana, not only is this person empty of any independent existence, but all phenomena, like the body and the mind and the room and the town and the world and the universe, also cannot be found, actually. We can't get a hold of anything out there either. So it's a subtler realization. Still, we're already freed. We're already liberated with the self by realizing deeply the selflessness of the person. But our free-flowing activity in the world may be somewhat constricted still, which is the first sickness. So this next, you could say, deeper, more subtle realization is that all phenomena are also selfless. They also, all things have no independent self. Dharma Nairatmiya. Pudala Nairatmiya and Dharma Nairatmiya. The identitylessness of the person, and then the subtler and more far-ranging identitylessness of all phenomena. But this too, in Zen, or according to Yunmen, even this realization of the emptiness of all phenomena is still a sickness. As he says again, having fully realized the emptiness of all phenomena, subtly, it still seems like there is something there. This too is the light not penetrating freely. One maybe correlation in the commentary that another Zen ancestor said is, searching for a donkey while riding on a donkey is one illness. After getting on the donkey, not willing to get down from the donkey is also an illness. So maybe those correlate with these two. Searching for the donkey while riding on it, like, who is this anyway? Who is this? It's a very good question to ask deeply. We're looking for who we are, but then we see that there is no other essential Atman that we really are. we're already riding on what we are. We could even say, it's just the constantly changing body and mind experience is all that we are. It's a rough donkey ride sometimes, this body and mind experience, but at least we don't have the problem of that it's my experience. Experience is happening, and as soon as it becomes mine, you can, you know, this kind of thing might sound very familiar to some of you. If so, I think we can still endlessly investigate it. If this sounds new, I highly recommend checking this out. What is even your, you know, feeling? And maybe we could even say relaxation factor when you think of my body and mind versus a body and mind that's just arising according to conditions. Sometimes just even thinking of those two differences, the body can actually relax. It might still be painful body, but if it's not kind of owned by some me that's kind of like responsible for it, it becomes much easier to work with. But once we find this maybe rough-rotted donkey of just experience happening with no owner, not being willing to get down from it, because how joyful a ride with nobody at the reins. Who would want to get down from such a donkey? This is also a sickness. We're attached to the freedom, in this case, of no self of the person and no self of things. Also in the commentary here, the commentator says, now as for when everything is not illumined and there is something in front of you is one illness, Dungshan, our Soto Zen ancestor, said, clearly she sees her face. There is no other reality. Don't go on mistaking the reflection for the head. I just thought this was wonderful because we happen to have this class series going on these verses of Dungshan. It just happens to appear in this story. So when there's still something seems to be here separate from us, it's like this verse of Dungshan. Looking in the mirror, there is no other reality than the reflections around. So don't go on thinking that there's something else in addition to the reflection before us in the mirror. Don't think there's some real face that truly exists. Be one interpretation. Also the commentator says, according to the fundamental way of the Dungshan lineage, this is our Soto lineage of Zen, if you're still, you sink into stagnant water. If you move, you're limited to the present. Thus, when going outward, do not react. When going inward, do not get stuck in emptiness. Outwardly not pursuing ramifications, inwardly not abiding in trance, naturally you will get beyond these sicknesses. So, outwardly not getting overly involved and grasping the world at large as truly substantially existent, going inwardly not getting stuck in the peaceful coolness of release, but going back out into the world at large, starting to get caught up in it. Okay, let go, come inward. Oh, it's so peaceful in the Zendo here. Do we really have to go back out again? Yes. But now we're kind of like, we forgot that these appearances are not what we think they are. we better go back to the Zendo. Oh, so nice. Don't get stuck here. So back and forth. Not getting stuck in the outer or the inner. So these are two sicknesses. Now, if we think that's enough, Yunmen still has more. Also, he says, the Dharma body has two kinds of sickness. So the Dharmakaya is like one of these called three bodies of Buddha. Like it's the reality body, the formless, inconceivable suchness of reality itself is called Buddha's Dharma body. Buddha also has a manifestation body. Like Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived in India in a particular time and place, was like manifested in a particular form with a name. So that Dharma body, the formless, inconceivable, empty suchness, is not separate from this person named Shakyamuni Buddha walking on the earth. But there's those two bodies. Right? So here Yunmen's talking about the Dharmakaya, the formless, inconceivable body of suchness that can be realized. And this Dharma body, usually it's said the Dharma body is basically, there's nothing beyond this. This is like complete Buddhahood, free from the slightest traces of any grasping. But in this case, the Dharma body has two kinds of sickness. One is when you manage to reach the Dharma body, but because your clinging to Dharma is not forgotten, your sense of self subtly still remains and you fall into the realm of the Dharma body and get stuck there. It's kind of similar to what we've already been talking about, but this, how can you get stuck in an inconceivable vastness of the universe as it is? it's so wonderful that you just, a little bit of holding. I think we're talking about very, very subtle types of dust we're working with here. And the last is, even if you can pass through, if you let go completely, that won't do either. Keep examining carefully. And think, what breath is there? This too is sickness. Or examining carefully, thinking, if there's anything more complete than this, would be another way to put it. This too is sickness. So this is like, maybe you've had an experience like in zazen sometimes when you're sitting really, really settled and still. You really have one of those times of almost seems like grace, where you're not really involved in all your thoughts so much. You're really just settled into the present. There's less and less conceptual activity and more peace and freedom and buoyancy. Totally awake, alert, and yet totally relaxed and not going anywhere else but not doing anything at all. Sometimes that little question comes up. It's almost a little checking question, like, or even a statement might even arise in the back of your mind, not even words maybe, but this little voice says, this is it. Or even just even that would be like, I think that's what we're referring to is this final sickness, a slight assessment of the situation, or even questioning, even the question of like, this is it, and how could there possibly be any anything more than this? Yeah. But to ask that is a little bit, very slightly sick. You know, it's just like a little scratch in the back of the throat. Sicknesses of the Dharma body. What inadequacy could there possibly be here? And you know, one way of looking at there's more and more subtle sicknesses here is the way that this is all just in our own experience, settling more and more deeply into this experience. It's not maybe freely circulating throughout the whole world, and we can almost like it's all happening on the cushion. So how do we now get up and interact in a free-flowing way? So here's the verse that celebrates this story. The dense web of myriad forms is so precipitous, passing through beyond location blocks the eyes. Or another translation is, the totality of the 10,000 things is allowed to be as it is. So precipitous, these words that mean something like a steep mountain also mean in Chinese, allowed to be as it is. Passing through to infinity or beyond location blocks the eyes. This is just reiterating the point. The dense web of myriad forms, all the things just being as they are, is already fine. Right? But passing through beyond any location, almost like not wanting to deal with the world of myriad forms, this blocks the eyes. Sweeping out one's garden, who has the strength? Hidden in a person's heart, it naturally produces feelings or emotions or thoughts. So sweeping out one's garden, who has the strength? We try to sweep the mind free of every possible trace of dust, right? Who has the strength to do such a thing? It's not a matter of sweeping out the garden. The commentary says, Yunmen was not telling us to get rid of illusory objects, annihilate illusory mind, and seek some other place of transcendence. The third ancestor in the Song of the Trusting Mind said, the six senses are not bad. Instead, they are the same as true enlightenment. So, the sensory world that we get so caught up in is itself already free and awake. Sweeping out one's garden, who has the strength to sweep away every last speck? It's not a this is not our practice. Hidden in a person's heart, a little trace of aversion to this dust naturally produces thoughts and emotions. A boat crosses a rustic ford, wet with autumn's azure blue. A pole standing in the white reed flowers, reflecting light off the snow, bright. This is, as the commentators say, an image for the Dharmakaya is like this drifting boat in the autumn blue, totally freely floating where the wind carries it, but then sailing into the white reed flowers that are shining in the snow. So you picture like a snowy bank on the edge of the river with white flowers on the snow. So it's white on white. This is one of these images in our tradition that's like phenomena completely interpenetrating with phenomena. It's so cool and spacious there, but there's this pole. This would be one way of translating. There's a pole on the back there that this Dharmakaya boat gets tied up to. A pole of a white pole in the white reed flowers on the snowy bank. It's getting a little stuck. This boat's getting a little bit tied down by this white on white realm. And the verse ends with a skewered fish. An old fisherman takes it to market. Floating in the wind, a single leaf travels on the waves. These strange Zen people. That's a different feeling now, right? Of this totally cool boat floating in the autumn's twilight, being tied up in the white reed flowers in the snow on a full moon. That kind of image is like so peaceful and cool, but it's a little bit tied up. And then the opposite is like this old fisherman skewering a fish and takes it to market and says, "How much will you give me for this fish?" It's such a different image, right? This is like returning to the marketplace with gift-bestowing hands. It's like no longer this cool serenity, but with a little bit of tether to the stake. Now it's walking freely through the marketplace, smelling like fish. Say, "I'll sell it to you for $2. And somebody says, "I'll give you $1.50. No bargains. $2. Period. And it's yours. Floating in the wind, a single leaf travels on the waves, carried wherever the waves take it. So, this might recall your own experiences in this practice. So I just, some images that came to mind for me, just kind of like these little snippets, and it's funny that these stuck with me. This is, you know, from all various tiny events that happened in these decades of practice, for some reason stuck. And I think because these sicknesses were being pointed out. So one memory I have is like a really great sesshin, you know, meditation retreat at Tassajara. In my first years there, I was so into it. And I felt like at the end of sesshin, like maybe you might feel sometimes like, this is it, right? This is like, how could I ever have any problem again? You know, and I remember having that kind of feeling, you know, coming out on the last day. I was also almost kind of exuberantly ecstatic, you know, because you mix in, how could there be any problem? But you're also totally relieved that sesshin is over, because it's so painful, right? So you feel really kind of like bubbly and loose, but you're also like, and now I can untwist my legs for a while. And so that kind of exuberant feeling, but really like free flowing. And I'm like, I have to like, and it's silent, you know, even when sesshin ends at Tassajara, it ends late at night, and then you just get up the next morning and do zazen again. So it's like, I'm like, I want to celebrate this, and I want to express my freedom to everybody a little bit. How can I do it? And I'm like, we were all filing out of the zendo together, and there's a big drum on the zendo walkway. And as I walked by the drum, I'm like, ba-dum, boom, or something. I just like, I'm free enough that I'm just going to like hit the drum. And I did that, and maybe a couple of people turned around and like, huh? I just kept walking. And I immediately felt this crushing sense of like, I had to like do something, right? I think it was kind of like, it was a kind of freedom sickness. I had to do something. Again, this sounds like a weird story, but why do I remember like nothing else from that whole practice period? But that one moment of like, I think it was the plummet from like it's being so high with this freedom and just like this little bit of kind of like, I think a little kind of like pride thing, right? A little bit of like, I'm going to express something here and like, I'm going to make it into something. It is something. I'm going to demonstrate it like this. Something like that, right? And no one was like, yeah. People were just like, we're going to bed now. Nobody said anything really. But I was you're very, very open state at the end of Sesshin. So it just like, I got immediately bad sickness. I was ill for like an hour afterwards. Funny those things, huh? So I think it's something related to this. And another, maybe a very similar one, that again I remember from this time when I was living and practicing in Sedona, Arizona, for some reason. It's a power spot. I felt like at that time in my life, my practice was not going very well. I'd been practicing some years, but like, I was not able to be so present. But maybe, I think this day, I had like a really good period of zazen. A really good period of zazen. And I was walking down the street afterwards, like kind of strutting in the sun. And I'm like, I am just like, again, like, what problem could there ever be in this life again? And like, this is just walking. This walking is just happening. It's like free walking. It's not my walking. I can't see any self here. And I'm like, it's a beautiful day. And this car goes by. And it's like some kids in the car kind of like looked out the window. I was just walking along. And they gave me kind of this dirty look. One of them did. I could see them in the window. And again, it was like this plummet. From this really free-flowing state that I didn't realize at the time I was making it into something, right? I thought I was just flowing along, but actually in the back of my mind, I think it was like, this is so cool to just be walking along in the present like this. And what could be a problem? And then a slight little look from some stranger, right, in a passing car, is like maybe he saw some sort of a little arrogance or something. Or like, you know, what's that guy trying to prove walking that way? You know? I don't know. But it hit me. It wasn't like, oh yeah, that's just what happened. It was like, I think again, the stranger pointed out my sickness. A kind of a pride in presence sickness. You know, in the Gendo Koan, one of Dogen's writings, we have that part about body and mind drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. It's also pointing to this story, Yunmen's Two Sicknesses, is all about traces of enlightenment. So, true freedom and being in the world for others as a bodhisattva has no traces of like, even this is it, or even how could there be anything beyond this? There's a little bit of trace. I recently saw the movie, Les Miserables. Do you all know that story? It was kind of new. I mean, I'd heard of it before, but I'd never actually seen a performance. And there was a new version, like about a year ago. And it was so moving to me. It's kind of, you know, in some ways it's a little bit corny, musical. The entire movie is sung. There's no spoken dialect. It's completely song, right? But this character, right, Jean Valjean, I thought, this is like a perfect bodhisattva. This person is amazing. Does anyone not know the story? Everyone knows the story. Les Miserables. Just very briefly, at the beginning, you know, he's Jean Valjean is in prison for stealing a loaf of bread to feed his starving sister. And there's a, you know, he's kept in prison for 20 years or something. And he finally gets out, and the guard really doesn't want him to succeed, and he has to carry these papers that say he's dangerous, so he can't get a job anywhere. And so he eventually starts starving himself, and he's like, I just need to do something. And this priest invites him into the church and feeds him. He eats ravenously and says, you can stay here, you can have a bed for the night. And in the night he feels like, I gotta get out of this situation somehow. So he gathers up all the silverware in the church and steals out in the night, and of course gets caught by the police, brought back. And they say, here he is, we caught him. Here's all your church belongings back. He stole them from you, and we're going to, like, put him in jail now. And the priest says, I gave these things to him. He didn't steal them. The police can barely believe it. But they let him go. And then after they go, he's like, if you can take these things that you already took, you can have them, but there's a little bit more I'd like to give you, too. And at this point, the guy breaks down, right? And he's converted to a bodhisattva through kindness, right? Through total, unconditional kindness, and becomes a great being. And then, is criticized. Basically, he gets distracted at one point, and somebody in his factory gets fired, and then ends up on the street and prostitution and all this, and she's about to get arrested for something, and he happens to be there on the scene, and she's like, you didn't care that the foreman fired me. And he's like, oh, was that my fault? I am so sorry. I'll take care of you, officer. I'm going to take care of her. Brings her to the hospital. She's about to die, right? And then he says, but she's like, my daughter, what will happen to my daughter? He says, I promise to take care of your daughter and raise her. Right? Extreme selflessness, getting nothing for himself. And then every time he gets caught by this unforgiving guard, he says, I'm happy to go back to prison for as long as you want, but just let me take care of this girl first. So it's like that. So this is a little bit like maybe the end of these sicknesses. We become like Jean Valjean. And just can live in the world, not really caring so much what happens to us, and just wish to benefit others. And we're willing to take any kind of blame or whatever. Doesn't matter as long as we can help. It's radical. Very moving to me, that movie. It's a great Dharma film if you haven't seen it recently. So... may any merit arising from tonight's event be dedicated to all sick beings everywhere. May everyone be released from their diseases and let the light circulate freely. Beings are numberless. I illusions are